buried there. Now there was no water for the congregation, so they gathered together against Moses and Aaron. And the people contended with Moses and spoke, saying, "If only we had died when our brethren died before the Lord. Why have you brought us, the assembly of the Lord, into this wilderness, that we and our animals should die here? And why have you made us come up out of Egypt to bring us to this evil place? It is not a place of grain, nor figs, nor wine, nor pomegranates, nor is there any water to drink." So Moses and Aaron went from the presence of the assembly to the door of the tabernacle of meeting, and they fell on their faces. And the glory of the Lord appeared to them. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Take the rod, you and your brother Aaron, gather the congregation together, speak to the rock before their eyes, and it will yield its water. Thus you shall bring water for them out of the rock and give drink to the congregation and their animals." So Moses took the rod from before the Lord, as he commanded him. And Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock, and he said to them, "Hear now, you rebels, must we bring water to you for you out of this rock?" Then Moses lifted his hand and struck the rock twice with his rod, and water came out abundantly, and the congregation drank, and their animals drank. Then the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, "Because you did not believe me to hallow me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land which I have given them." This was the water of Meribah, because the children of Israel contended with the Lord, and he was hallowed among them. Moses' life of service to God is bookended by two mountaintop experiences. That first mountaintop experience we've looked at, and we've studied the significance of that mountain over the last 3 weeks, Mount Sinai. In Exodus chapter 3, God calls to Moses from the burning bush at Mount Sinai. A few months later, in Exodus chapter 19 and 20, God meets Moses again on Mount Sinai with the whole congregation of Israel and establishes his covenant with Israel that establishes them as his people, and he is their God. And so this was kind of the beginning of Moses' life of service to God. Now that beginning really took place when he was 80 years old. And we'll go back into some of the details of Moses' life in a little bit. But that beginning point at Mount Sinai at age 80 really was kind of the establishment, the beginning point of Moses' service to God. Moses' service to God comes to an end in another mountaintop experience. And that is the mountain of Nebo, or Mount Pisgah. If you'll turn to Joshua, or to Deuteronomy chapter 34. Deuteronomy chapter 34. In verse 1 it says, "Then Moses went up from the plains of Moab to Mount Nebo, to the top of Pisgah." And so we look at this passage and we see Nebo and Pisgah talked about several times throughout the Pentateuch. And we see that there are this name for this mountain. And the question is this the same mountain, or is this one or two mountains? Which is it? And there are several options for us there. It could be that it's two mountains, and it's in the same range, the mountain range of the Abarim. It's in the land of Moab, the east side of the Jordan River, the east side of the Dead Sea. And it could simply be two mountains in the same range. It may be that it's the same mountain, but it's known by different names, by different cultures. Or it may be that it's the same mountain, but there are two different peaks on that mountain. When we talk about Mount Everest, there are over 7,000 peaks on Mount Everest. There's one that's 29028. It's the tallest one in the world. But there are many different peaks. And so it may be that this is the same mountain, but with two different peaks. The one peak that's Pisgah and one that's Nebo. Either way, we see that Moses is brought to this mountain at the very end of his life. And this mountain is known for its views. Its location, as I said, is off the northeast corner of the Dead Sea, on the east side of the Jordan River. And from that mountain, it was said that you could view as far north as Mount Hermon, which was north of the Sea of Galilee. I mean, that's a pretty long distance that you could see from Mount Pisgah. To the south and to the east, you could see the wilderness and the land of Moab. And then to the west, you could see Canaan. And if the Mount of Israel, or the Mount of Jerusalem, was not there, you could likely see all the way to the Mediterranean. And so this mountain was known for its views. But there was another significant event that took place at Mount Pisgah before we get to the end of Moses' life. And that's back again in the book of Numbers in chapter 23. Numbers chapter 20, where we read a few moments ago, the children of Israel are in the wilderness, heading toward the promised land, and they were grumbling against Moses and Aaron because they didn't have water. And Moses brings water from the rock, but we see he did so in such a way that didn't glorify God. He went against God's command. He didn't speak to the rock. He actually struck the rock with the rod, and he said, "Must we bring water out of this rock?" And didn't glorify God. But they continue on, and they continue to defeat their enemies. And as they come into the land of Moab, the Moabites now are fearful because they've heard of the reputation of the Israelites. They've heard that they're defeating the armies that are in their way. And so the king of Moab, Balak, sends for the prophet Balaam. And he knows that when the prophet Balaam curses someone, that those people remain cursed. If Balaam blesses them, they remain blessed. So he calls to Balaam and he says, "I need you to go to Israel and I need you to curse the Israelites, because they are coming into our territory, and we've seen what they've done to the other peoples whom they have moved upon." And so Balaam, and we know the whole story of Balaam and the donkey, and we'll move past that, where Balaam gives his first oracle. Balak takes Balaam up to one of the altars of Baal, and he offers sacrifices on that altar and tells Balaam there to curse Israel. But of course, Balaam had been instructed and warned by God that you can go speak to Balak, but you can only speak the words I put in your mouth. And so in chapter 23, the first few verses, beginning in verse 7, we see that Balaam gives his prophecy regarding Israel, and it's not a curse at all. And Balak is infuriated with him. "What have you done to me?" he says in verse 11. "I took you to curse my enemies, and look, you have blessed them bountifully." And so Balaam answered and said, "Must I not take heed to speak what the Lord has put in my mouth?" Then Balak said to him, beginning of verse 13, "Please come with me to another place from which you may see them. You shall see only the outer part of them and shall not see all of them. Curse them for me from there." So he took him to the field of Zophim, to the top of Pisgah, and built 7 altars and offered a bull and a ram on each altar. And he said to Balak, "Stand here by your burnt offering while I meet with the Lord over there." Then the Lord met Balaam and put a word in his mouth and said, "Go back to Balaam and thus you shall speak." So Balak took Balaam up to the top of Pisgah, again, because he could see all of the Israelites, or at least a portion of the Israelites. There were so many in number, he couldn't see all of them. But he had a good view of the land of Moab and could see them. And again, he told them, "Now that you see them, you must curse them." But of course, we know Balaam couldn't do it. Balaam could only speak that word which God had given to him. So this is the first significant event that we see on Mount Pisgah. But let's turn back to Deuteronomy chapter 34, because this is really where I want us to focus our attention this morning. Is this final bookend of Moses' life. As I said, his journey as a servant of God began 40 years earlier when he was 80 years old. At Mount Sinai, and now here, at 120 years old, he has led the Israelites to the very edge of the promised land. But remember what we read a few moments ago in Numbers chapter 20, because Moses had disobeyed God, because Moses had not glorified God in bringing the water out of the rock, Moses was now not going to be able to enter into the promised land. But God, right before Moses was to die, allowed Moses to see, essentially, his life's work in front of him. And so it tells us in verse 1 of chapter 34, that Moses went up from the plains of Moab to Mount Nebo, to the top of Pisgah, which is across from Jericho. And the Lord showed him all the land of Gilead as far as Dan, all Naphtali and the land of Ephraim and Manasseh and the land of Judah as far as the western sea, the south, the plain of the valley of Jericho, the city of palm trees as far as Zoar. Then the Lord said to Moses, "This is the land of which I swore to give to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, 'I will give it to your descendants.' I have caused you to see it with your eyes, but you shall not cross over there." So Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab, according to the word of the Lord. And he buried him in a valley in the land of Moab, opposite Beth Peor, but no one knows his grave to this day. Moses was 120 years old when he died. His eyes were not dim, nor his natural vigor diminished. And the children of Israel wept for Moses in the plains of Moab 30 days. So the days of weeping and mourning for Moses ended. Now Joshua, the son of Nun, was full of the spirit of wisdom, for Moses had laid his hands on him. So the children of Israel heeded him and did as the Lord commanded Moses. But since then there has not arisen in Israel a prophet like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face. And all the signs and wonders which the Lord sent to him to do in the land of Egypt, before Pharaoh, before all his servants, and in all his land, and by all that mighty power and all the great terror which Moses performed in the sight of all Israel. Moses' life ended at Pisgah. That final bookend, that mountaintop experience before he died. And there are three key lessons I want us to learn from Mount Pisgah as we look through these passages today. And that first lesson is that it may take us a full lifetime to achieve our life's purpose. It may take us a full lifetime to do that which God has intended for us. And sometimes that's difficult for us, isn't it? I know when I'm at work and I get a project, I like a project that I can start today and finish today and wrap it up and put a bow on it and say it's done, right? It's nice, and we can say we've got it finished, and next day we can move on to something new. Life isn't like that. I've told you before, much to Jay's chagrin, I love to mow my yard. And the reason I love to mow my yard is because I can do it in about an hour and a half, and I can stand back after I'm finished and go, "That looks good. I started the project, I finished it, I got it done, I know what I did, and I can see the results of it." When we look back at the life of Moses, his life was not like that at all, was it? We go way back to his early days. The Hebrew writer tells us in Hebrews chapter 11, at a very young age, Moses refused to identify with the house of Egypt, right? He was brought up in the palace in Egypt. He was brought up as an Egyptian, but he refused to see himself as a son of Pharaoh. Instead, he chose to identify with his people, with the Israelites. It would have been real easy for him to say, "I've got it made. I'm here in the palace of the most powerful king of the most powerful nation in all the land. There's nothing I have to do." But instead, he chose to identify with his own people. At age 40... and we know this from Stephen in Acts chapter 7. Age 40, we read that Moses interjected himself into a fight between an Egyptian and a Hebrew. An Egyptian who was beating a Hebrew. And Moses, defending his people, killed that Egyptian and buried him. And then the very next day, he tries to intervene between two Hebrews who are in a dispute. And those Hebrews did not take kindly to it, did they? They said, "Are you going to kill us like you killed that Egyptian?" And Stephen tells us in Acts chapter 7 that Moses at that age supposed that he would be the one, that they would understand that God was going to make him the one who would deliver the Israelites. But instead, he fled into the wilderness and went to Midian and stayed there for another 40 years. For another 40 years. It wasn't until he was 80 years old, 40 years later, that God called him up to Sinai and called to him from the burning bush. And by then, Moses had a very different idea about delivering Israel, didn't he? When he was 40, he was ready to go. When he was 80, he was like, I'm not sure I'm your guy. And you can imagine why, right? You have an idea at age 40, and you think this is what my life is going to look like. And instead, you spend the next 40 years tending sheep in the wilderness. I can't imagine at age 80 going, oh, I'm going back to that dream I had at age 40. And so Moses was called at age 80 to lead the Israelites out. But it wasn't going to be an easy task, was it? He had to stand up against Pharaoh. He had to face him down. He had to stand up against those who would grumble against he and Aaron over and over and over in the wilderness. It wasn't going to be a direct route from Egypt to the Promised Land. It wasn't going to be 9 months or a year. No, because of the grumblings and the complainings of the Israelites, that turned into 40 more years, didn't it? And so here Moses was commissioned by God to deliver his people Israel from the hand of the Egyptians and take them to the Promised Land. And that didn't wrap up in a day or a month or a year. But it took him another full 40 years to get there. It took him a lifetime to fulfill his purpose that God had given him. And that's difficult for us sometimes, isn't it? We want it and we want it now. We find that out as parents too, right? You know, we think, well, we can just really focus on our children the first few years of their lives and boy, it'll just be smooth sailing from there. Well, let me tell you, it's not. It doesn't work out that way, does it? Now, you better set that foundation when they're young. There's no doubt about it. But there are going to be rocky periods ahead. And you'll go through them and you'll entreat God and you'll worry, have I done the right things? It's a long, long process. And our life's purpose in serving the Lord, it's not something we can tie up neatly in a bow in a couple of weeks. It took Moses a lifetime to achieve his purpose that God had for him. Second key lesson that we can learn from Mount Pisgah is that we don't need to do this alone. And in fact, we need to be preparing those who are coming on behind us to be able to take up that mantle. And we see that all throughout the Scriptures, don't we? We can look at Elijah, the prophet Elijah, as he prepared Elisha to take up his mantle. We look at Jesus, spent 3 years with his disciples, who would then become apostles, who would take his message to the ends of the earth. Jesus groomed them. Jesus mentored them. Jesus brought them up so that they could carry on the message. Paul did the same thing. He taught Timothy. And he told Timothy, you need to go out and teach these things I'm teaching you to other faithful men who can then go teach other faithful men. And Paul told Titus, tell the older women to teach the younger women certain things. Tell the older men to be examples to the younger men. And so another lesson we learned from Pisgah is that we need to be teaching and mentoring those who are coming up behind us. What happened when Moses died? Was there a vacuum of leadership in Israel? Absolutely not. Why? Because there was one who had been mentored and brought in behind Moses who was prepared, who was ready to take over when Moses died. Joshua, the son of Nun, was full of the spirit of wisdom, for Moses had laid his hands on him. And when we go back and look at the history of Joshua and how much he shows up in Moses' life, it's really pretty incredible. When Israel first came out of Egypt, God kept them from any battles for a little while. He took them in some pretty strange routes to get out of there so that they would avoid having to fight some other armies. But when they did encounter their first battle, it was Joshua who was chosen to lead them into battle against the Amalekites. And they defeated the Amalekites. When we get to Mount Sinai in chapter 19 and 20, And a little bit later, Joshua went up on the mountain with Moses. Now, he didn't go all the way to the top, but it was always Joshua who went up with him part of the way. Later in Numbers, when we get to the promised land the first time, and remember all the spies who went into the land to spy out the land, the 12 spies, and 10 of them came back and said, "We can't do this." There were two who said, "Yes, we can. Yes, we can. Because it's not us, it's God." And who are those two? Caleb and Joshua. Joshua. And then later, as they were approaching the promised land again after the 40 years, there were men who were appointed to divide up the land, one from each tribe. But then there were two men who were set over them to lead them. And that was Eleazar the priest and Joshua the son of Nun. And so you can see that development all the way back from the time when they first left Egypt. That Joshua was being groomed, being mentored at the feet of Moses with the Spirit of God upon him. And so we need to consider, what are we doing to bring up the next generation? Now, I'm not just talking about our children. Absolutely, we need to be mentoring and bringing up our children in that way. But it's more than that, isn't it? Older women, teach the younger women. Older men, be an example to the younger men. Older married couples, are we helping the younger married couples understand what marriage is about? Older married couples, are we teaching older parents? Are we teaching younger parents how to bring up their children? We as a congregation, the elders and the deacons here, are we mentoring younger men so that they can be prepared to be elders of the next generation? Elders don't just appear out of the blue. Congregations have elders because there are people who are grooming them along the way. And what are we doing individually to teach others and bring them up in the Lord and strengthen their faith? One thing we learn at Mount Pisgah is that there wasn't a void in leadership when Moses died. And that's because all along there was one who was being groomed. And so we need to take heed to that. We need to understand that. We need to be doing the same thing. We need to be bringing others along. As we grow, we need to make sure others are growing with us. And that we're sharing what we have and what we have learned and what we have done with the next generation. The third lesson we learned from Pisgah is that God keeps His promises. God keeps His promises. And this is a lesson we need to be preaching continually. And we need to be telling others continually. God keeps His promises. I suspect if I said, "Is there anybody in this room who's kept every promise they've ever kept? Raise your hand." No one would raise their hands. I'm embarrassed to say my batting record's probably not very good when it comes to that. But God keeps 100% of His promises. If He says it, it will happen. God had promised Israel that He would deliver them. Going back to Genesis chapter 12, God had promised Abraham, "Your descendants will live in this land. You won't be around, but your descendants will live in this land." And before Abraham even had children, "You will have descendants as great as the sand of the sea or the stars of the sky. And they will inhabit this land." And you can imagine Abraham at the age he was scratching his head going, "Okay." But God keeps His promises. And when Moses went up to the top of Pisgah, God said, "Here is the land that I have promised." Remember, Balak took Balaam up to the land and he pointed him to the south and the east and said, "Look at the Israelites and what a danger they are to us." Not looking to the west. But here God has taken Moses up, looking over the Dead Sea, looking across the Jordan River and saying, "Look at the land that flows with milk and honey. The land that I have promised. This is the land that you have brought your people to. You have brought my people to. They will enter this land because of your life's work. There are several times it seemed like it may not happen because of Israel's rebellion. But God keeps His promises. And so what promise is it today that you need to hear that maybe you've forgotten? Maybe the promise that God's going to take care of you if you put His kingdom first. Seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. Why do you worry about food and clothing and shelter? Does not God clothe the lilies of the field? God has promised to take care of us if we put Him first. Maybe there's another promise you need to hear. Maybe there's a promise you need to hear regarding someone, a loved one you've known that has passed on. We've seen that in the last few days. What we know is that God is faithful. And God has promised those who are faithful to Him that they are going to spend eternity with Him. And while it's hard to let go, we don't want to see people go. We don't want to see them gone. We want to selfishly cling to them here. But what we know from God's promises is that they are with Him for eternity. And maybe we need to hear that for ourselves, right? That if we stay faithful to God, that if we are living our lives for Him, not for ourselves, not for trying to stake claim and put down roots in this world, but if we're living for Him and sharing that with others, that He has a promise for us, eternity with Him forever. These are three big lessons that we can learn from this mountain. That it may take us a lifetime to achieve what God has planned for us. And that we need to be patient. We need to be persistent. The Hebrew writer talks about the race going to the one who persists to the end. Perseverance. This life of service to God is not a sprint, it's a marathon. And Mount Pisgah teaches us that. That it may take a full lifetime to achieve our purpose. Secondly, we need to be bringing others along with us. We need to be teaching others and training others. We need to be bringing others along so that they can then take on that mantle when we've gone on. And then thirdly, it reminds us that God is faithful and true. That God will remember us. That God will take us home. If we are faithful to Him, if we have run that race with endurance and perseverance, we can spend eternity with our Creator, our Father, in heaven. If you're not sure what you need to do to get in the race, come talk to us. We'd love to sit